One. Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is Saturday, September 3rd. We are live with a Decent Crypto Recap. I'm here with Matthew Blumberg, who's coming to us live from Hamptons. Matt, how you doing today, brother?
I'm doing great, man. I'm just muzzing. It is a beautiful day. Beautiful day out here in the Hamptons. Spent all night hanging with my friends in the forest, having a fire. Just got back from beautiful California.
All right.
Where I hit
How's
the
California?
One. I hit the one, the only Solana Beach, California.
Oh, baby. Solana Beach. All right. Nice.
I was with
how's everyone doing over there? Everyone's down bad. How's SBF?
Yeah, amazingly, no one had heard of Solana. How's SBF? Yeah. So the entire town of Solana Beach is an FTX office. it's like the Bahamas.
Just about.
I was with a pretty normie friend, and I was like, dude, is that a town called Solana Beach? And I like made him like park the car to buy a t-shirt. And he was like, what the fuck? Like, am I missing something here? I'm like, no, you're not missing anything. Don't worry. But Neon Labs, don't sleep on it. But
you know, that's so funny. This was completely unplanned. I'm wearing my Gitcoin shirt. And I was actually with a normie friend this weekend. We were driving around and we ran into a town called Gitcoin. We had to stop and I bought the shirt. It's so weird, man.
Wow. What are the odds?
It's an insane world. What are the odds, dude? Wow. So we both have wild stories from the week past already.
Let's get into some wild stories from the week past.
Some real wild stories, man. I don't even know where to start with this one. Ava Labs, though.
Yeah, let's start with the incendiary.
Anytime you can talk about Ava Labs in this kind of manner, and especially this man Goon in this kind of manner, whether or not this is true, I want to start with a disclaimer. We have no idea if any of the statements made in this article we're about to talk about are true. There are some videos which seem true, seem verifiable. They're not that incendiary, the videos in my mind, but the statements made in the article are quite incendiary. So, yeah, Matt, what even happened?
What even happened? Great question. Over the weekend, last weekend, a story broke about, I think it's a highly reputable media company.
they've written three deep dives ever. Three like research pieces. This Dude. Is their third. There's their third publication.
What kind? What is the bar here? We do a deep dive every week. Yes, it's about the merge every week. But,
Dude, somebody told me that we've done 59 episodes now. Can you believe that?
Wow,
it's pretty ridiculous,
that's
right?
That's wild.
Yeah.
This
is their third piece ever. It's this group called CryptoLeaks.
Yeah, and what were their other pieces about? Do you know?
I don't know, but they were like kind of in the kind of like L1 smart contract space.
Interesting. And like, are they always just like, you know, highly, well, okay, let's get into Ava Labs one. So,
they're more or less hit pieces. Yeah.
So Ava Labs hired this lawyer, right? If you take like everything they say at face value, here's the story they're presenting. Ava Labs hires a lawyer, and the lawyer is basically on camera saying like, yes, I'm like intimately involved in Ava Labs. I got like 1% of the token allocation.
1% of the equity of the company as well.
Yeah. Which is like, why is the company worth anything? But okay. What are the cash flows for Ava Labs? Like,
yeah.
Like it's down only, right? it feels like maybe a vehicle that just owns a lot of Ava, like Avalanche tokens. So maybe that's
pretty
it.
Much, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably the way that they hire the employees and.
Yeah,
like that, right?
Payroll, HR.
It's probably like the Switzerland domicile company.
Yeah, like, I guess like a consensus. I don't know. They hired this lawyer, and the accusation is effectively that they were using litigation as a tactic to subvert other layer one blockchains, competitors to Avalanche. I guess this is problematic for a couple of reasons. If we believe the story, The first is that, like, we have when you file a lawsuit, you can do discovery, right? And so mm-hmm. steal trade secrets. Now, why there mm-hmm. are trade secrets in a fully open source software community is beyond me. But that's the first allegation, right? Is that they were like suing.
Well, there could be trade secrets in the sense of like the deals that they're working on in the future, you know, partnerships that they might have in place, or even like technology that they're working on for the future, stuff like that, that might be private information, even though it is a, you know, open source software. Yeah,
I guess, right? If you're working on tech for the future, though, like the implication is that like soon it will be open source. Like if you look at like Polygon, yeah, but that's sort of their model, right? Like everything that they build is available on GitHub. No, it's really kind of hard to use, but like it is there, you know. And to be fair, like I don't understand why. Like, if we can take a quick aside, Avalanche's consensus protocol is really good, and it can scale to like infinite numbers of validators. And I don't understand why more blockchains are not building off of that rather than off of Tendermint, which is like sort of industry standard. Maybe it's just like Tendermint's been around longer, but wow. Tendermint doesn't.
Bro, scale that very was. Well. The last thing I was expecting you to say right now, just a full plug for Avalanche.
Not nice. For Avalanche, for Snowman, for their Snowman consensus protocol.
Right, right. So you're literally, this is a Jewel podcast. Once again, you're basically making the argument for DFK chain.
not for the chain, literally for the consensus mechanism. Right.
So you wouldn't build a chain on it, but you would use their consensus, and then what? It would be like another EVM compatible chain. Like
So how does that work? You can picture it a little bit like, you know how like in Cosmos you have chains that are like not IBC integrated, and they're not like they don't use the Atom token to provide like staking. They use their own like native token. That's how I would use it. So like Polygon, for example, builds off of the Cosmos SDK. I would just like take this module, the consensus module, out of the Avalanche. You know, they don't have an SDK, but like, you know, it's all open source and available. I would use that way. Like, if there is demand to like run a large decentralized network of validators, like you can actually support it, as opposed to like a hard cap of 130 with Tendermint.
Yeah, but to my knowledge, isn't that what DFK chain is doing too?
So DFK chain is slightly different, right? Their validators are a subset of validators that are also validating the Avalanche like main chain, like the C chain.
Okay, I see. P-chain, so you have to be validating. You have to be validating the Avalanche main chain to be also be a DFK chain validator. Okay, I see.
Yeah, and I think the idea is that like they want to drive like demand for AVAX token, and you need a minimum of like, you know, it was in the millions of dollars. Now it's probably lower, but you need like quite a substantial amount of AVAX tokens in order to like participate in validating the main chain.
Isn't the Atom token going through a pretty similar change in tokenomics?
I don't know much about the change, but like the original vision has been kind of like shared security, and it's similar.
Mm-hmm.
The part that like all of these protocols are missing is like, if I'm a developer and I want to like launch a new blockchain, I need to somehow get in touch with someone that has a lot of Atom or a lot of AVAX or whatever. And there's no like easy way to do that. Especially with Cosmos, where like it's much less centralized than something like Ava Labs. Like with Ava Labs, you can get in touch with their business development people and say, hey, I'm thinking about making a subnet for, you know, DeFi Kingdoms. And Ava Labs will come in, and they love subnets as just a narrative. And they want to like, you know, encourage like the first end projects that are building on it. And so they actually heavily subsidized the AVAX allocation for like, I think it's like four or five validators on the DFK chain subnet. Versus like with Cosmos, it's like there really still today is no way of like actually doing it. Like if you actually wanted to launch a chain that uses Cosmos's validators for like shared security, there's just I have no idea how you would do that.
Right.
Which is, I think, why we haven't really seen any so far, to my knowledge, like the Cosmos zones. Like there are zones, right? But like they're, you know, it feels like the validators are sort of operated by the zone operators, as opposed to like a marketplace where like people can go to any Cosmos validator and be like, hey, if you want like a little bit of block rewards in our native token, like you can just validate our subnet too, or our zone as well. So, you know, the marketplace is sort of the key thing here that is like, it's the social consensus of like, you know, a meeting place where stakers and blockchain developers can come together, and like, exchange goods and services. That's, do you see what I mean? Like in theory, yeah, it works, fully. But in practice, like there's no way of executing.
Yeah. Huh. So I haven't looked too deeply into this, but I think there's a bunch of changes happening to like both the Atom token and like Cosmos itself in the coming months that are kind of built to address this. Maybe after the merge is over, that's when we'll do our deep dive finally on Cosmos.
Finally, a Cosmos deep dive. Holy shit.
I know, right? I know.
It'll either be a deep dive or a FOMO of the week. getting back
definitely not a FOMO of the week. Have you seen the Atom price?
Oh my God, have I?
Yeah. Oh my Lord.
I think I bought Atom at the all-time high. I bought a little bit of Atom at the all-time high. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the all-time high? Like $47 or something?
I completely forget.
Okay. Do you want to get into the
Let's get back to Able Labs. The accusation is that Able Labs like gave a bunch of tokens to this lawyer in exchange for legal services. And the lawyer is like suing all of their competitors, like bad press. Mm-hmm. You know, so it accomplishes a few things, like bad press. It can slow down like their business practices, and it can potentially expose like sensitive information. So I think
so this guy is on video basically bragging like, I think I know within like the top 10 people in the whole industry about like what's going to happen, because I know exactly like what every company is doing, what every company's financials look like, what their like future looks like. Like that is all on video. You can see that.
But the videos overall were not like smoking guns, right? Like they were
definitely
like,
not.
They had to be taken with a lot of context, like, and there was a ton of leading 100%. Questions. Yeah.
100% leading questions. And also like, if that's a lawyer saying all of those things, like that is him just stating facts like about himself, in my opinion, right? He's just like, look, the fact that I'm suing all these big companies allows me to see what's going on behind closed doors of all the biggest companies in the space. And that gives me a view into, like, it just gives me like a wide lens view, like a bird's eye view of the whole industry. And so I probably am within the top 10 people in the whole industry in terms of like information about like what's going to happen, you know? And you can say that's nefarious. You can say that his practices are nefarious, but that to me is just kind of stating facts.
Yeah, 100%.
Whether or not that's true, like that's they're facts in his mind. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, there were a lot of like really interesting takes on these videos. Like they could be deep fakes, right? For all we know.
Like, so that was the thing that was really interesting to me. It's like, at this point, you just can't know what is real at all. Right.
Yeah.
Do you think that's, but okay. We should mention that Tether and Poloniex both basically filed, I don't know exactly how the legal process for this works, but basically filed to have this guy removed, or this law firm removed from their cases because of these videos.
I mean, so, I guess if you're getting sued, like anything that gives you an opening to like file to remove the lawyer that's running the show, like is a good thing.
Yeah. Or, but even like in like class action stuff, they filed to remove him from like class action suits.
Oh, interesting.
Where he's involved. Yeah. Basically alleging that this is nefarious.
Yeah.
What else is relevant relating to Able Labs? Like, what is the actual allegation from their side, or like regarding their company?
So I mean, the actual allegation is that like they're running this nefarious, like, you know, smear campaign, or like set of smear campaigns, with like where they're taking legal action against competitors, which is, yeah, I guess,
it's specifically like, mentioned is Solana. But yeah,
like since the dawn of time, companies have done this, right? This is not like super wild. It's kind of scummy, right? It kind of lands because like the one, the cringiest man in crypto, Emin Gunsirer, like is sort of running the show at Avalanche. that's not, you know, like, it's not great because, like, you'd fucking believe it. Like, if there's one person in the space, like, if someone said that Vitalik had hired a lawyer to run a smear campaign against, like, non-EVM compatible blockchains, you'd be like, great, that's a great conspiracy. But, like, with mm-hmm. Goon, you're like, eh, yeah, probably happened.
Mm-hmm. With Goon, it's like, are you serious? Like, dude, this is the most blatant thing. Be a little bit more clever about it, you know?
But the thing is that, like, I don't know. I don't know what to believe. And, like, look, part of it is just, like, the writing tone, right? Like,
the writing tone is just so, frankly, bad. Like,
it's so amateur. It's
not convincing at all.
It reads like an infomercial, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it feels like they're just trying to sell you on a narrative, and it doesn't feel like
pretty
investigative journalism. It feels like, you know, almost like an attempt at, like, striking a whistleblower tone.
Definitely.
But, like, without, like, whistleblower-esque, like, quality journalism. This isn't, like,
so an now, investigative
piece, right? This is, like,
let's get into, like, the real conspiracy, which is that CryptoLeaks is basically just a front for ICP, and they're commissioning all these hit pieces on their competitors because they are a failing company that doesn't do anything. And yeah, now they're reaching for straws.
Where does this conspiracy stem from? Are they funded by ICP? Like, do we know that?
There is some kind of connection between CryptoLeaks and ICP. The ICP founder keeps tweeting out their articles, and I don't know what the exact connection outside of that is, but so many people have been saying this that I don't know if I believe it, but I do believe that it's commissioned by somebody, these big pieces, you know, because it's like, it makes no sense otherwise just like, if you watch all the videos, like, go in and watch every single video, right? There's like 8 videos. They're all between 10 and 30 seconds, 8 to 10 videos. It's not going to take much time. The mismatch between the tone and the language in the article and the videos themselves, it's basically a lawyer, like a kind of scummy looking lawyer, just bragging about how smart he is and, like, how much information he has. And then the article is basically like, yeah, this basically proves that Ava Labs is a mob. It's like, okay.
So. I really liked one of the responses. So the guy is like, oh yeah, like, I'm, the lawyer's like, oh yeah, I'm, like, so close, like, with, like, all the Ava Labs founders, like, I'm literally living with Kevin Sechnicki, like, right now. And did you see
that? Was hilarious. Yes, yes.
He's like, bro, I don't know this man, or, like, I'm not living with this man. Like, I live in my parents' basement. I haven't had a go over in, like, 9 months.
He's like, now everybody knows I don't get any, but you know what? I don't get any anyways, so who cares? Like, I'm just like, I mean, okay, like, that's one way to try and dispel this stuff. Like,
I mean, no such thing as bad press.
To be an incel. I guess so, yeah.
Here's the thing, right? Like, this is literally the only time we've talked about Avalanche in, like, 6 months, right? Like,
dude,
is the whole thing
no
such
dive.
Thing as bad press?
Like, I guess so. Well, you know what? Maybe this is a dually commissioned report by Avalanche and ICP.
Dude,
to get attraction to, to get attention to both of them.
Can you imagine the guy at BizDev at Ava Labs that's like, trust me, man, just trust me. Like, smear campaign's great, man. Generate some controversy. All of Twitter's gonna be talking about, you know, like, he's been charged with, like, making Avalanche's, like, Twitter mentions go up by, like, 20x in the next week, or otherwise he loses his job. And, like, he's like, well, I got one way. Like, it ain't subnets.
I got a Hail Mary here. Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. I mean, but so Avalanche, the token was down, like, pretty substantially. I think it was down like 18-20% the day of, and then, like, I think it rebounded. But the rest of the market was down too. It wasn't down, like, outsized. It wasn't down 40. So I don't know. You know, like, it doesn't seem like people are taking this too seriously, and I think probably, like, we've already taken it too seriously by talking about it for 10 minutes.
100%. I think that your tirade on the Avalanche consensus mechanism was the main takeaway here.
It's a good consensus mechanism. Like, what the actual fuck? Like,
we need to snowman deep dive.
I mean, the thing about the Avalanche consensus mechanism that like we didn't cover in as much detail as I would have liked to in the 2.5 hour deep dive is that these other blockchains are just like unable to reach the level of decentralization that you get with something like Bitcoin or Ethereum, right? Like if you're building on Tendermint, you are fundamentally limited at this hard cap of 130 validators. And that to me really fucks with the dream here, right? Like why not just use layer two, right? Like unless like you can have like an open, like super permissionless system where like anyone can come in and validate, like, you know, like what are you building? Right. Yeah. Like, that's, and we saw how that can get dangerous, right? With Luna, right? Like, you know, with Tendermint, if you have 33% of the like total stake tokens, 30% of that 130 validators, which you can actually achieve with less than 30% of the tokens, right? All you need is as much as the bottom 33%. Like you can halt the chain, like that's like kind of dangerous, right? Like how do you put your trust? Like if you're really, really like a crypto person and like believe strongly that like this is where you want to keep your assets, how can you feel safe using a chain that like, you know, 48 like validators could just like halt it?
Yeah, 48. You know, there's been this big question about how much decentralization is enough decentralization. And a lot of people have come around this like 10,000 validator number, which I'm starting to really agree with. You know, 10,000 seems about right, but 48 is definitely not the number.
Do you know how many validators there are like for like the post-merge Ethereum?
No, I'm not sure. But I think it's more than 10,000.
Definitely. Yeah. It's in the hundreds of thousands. And look, they might be operated by companies, but like, look, like at least like if you wanted to, you know, drop 32 ETH, like, or you and I could split 32 ETH and like operate our own validator and like participate actively in maintaining the fact that the chain will keep going. And with like something like Tendermint based consensus, like we would need as much native token as that like smallest validator has out of the top 130, which is just like a larger economic barrier to participation.
So your point about the Avalanche consensus mechanism, do you think that is a chance to actually get closer to the decentralization levels of Bitcoin and ETH, or is that just another one of these things that is not going to work?
No, I think it has a chance. Yeah. Because like, it scales, right? Like it scales theoretically to millions of validators. Right. And like the other ones just don't. And so it feels like, I don't know if it has a chance to like be as decentralized as Bitcoin and ETH, especially like in today's state of the world where like you need a certain minimum amount of AVAX to participate. So then the question is like, well, why do you need that minimum amount of AVAX to participate? Is it because it actually doesn't scale to millions of validators or what? Right. At least like it's open, right? There is in theory that possibility. At least, you know, you don't see that same performance issue that you get from Tendermint. Tendermint and minimalist, man.
Interesting. Wait, sorry, one more thing. When you say it is open, is it like, what's the comparison right now? It's like 32 ETH versus the amount of AVAX. I mean, I think it's like you need 1,000 AVAX, right? I think it's 1,000.
Yeah, so my target price for AVAX, that's like $4,000. If you need 1,000 AVAX at like 20 bucks in AVAX, that's like $20,000. Smaller than operating an ETH validator, right?
Wait, what was the max price of AVAX? Like 200 bucks?
I think it hit like 140 or something.
Oh my goodness, that's so wild.
Back in November, so it's
either
Suzu. It was all Suzu, posting about AVAX incessantly.
Bull posting and leveraging up.
responsibly.
That makes sense.
The barrier to participate in AVAX may actually be the lowest in the like major L1s right now.
Right now it is, because I remember it used to be either 1,000. So it's either 1,000 or 2,000 tokens, AVAX tokens. And I remember at the peak price, it was like a couple hundred thousand bucks. And I was like, damn, that's pretty high. And then I remember it also being higher than 32 ETH at that time in dollar value. But now it's obviously flipped where
the flippening,
you can become an AVAX validator pretty easily. Maybe that's what we should do.
Well, I mean, there is an interesting thing here, which is like, all right, how much does it cost to, like, if you and I wanted to participate in Bitcoin as a block producer, you know, mm-hmm. even if like, let's say what's the minimum amount we could use to do it profitably. Right. And cause like it costs almost nothing to operate like a proof of stake validator. And so it's just about like that upfront cost of like the stake. Is it like, you know, what's the minimum size of Bitcoin mining, like dollars that you need to spend to actually mine profitably?
It's got to be very high.
It's higher than 20 grand.
A few hundred thousand. Not. Oh yeah, definitely higher than 20 grand. Also, the thing is, you have recurring costs. So that's true. You have high upfront costs to get started, and you have recurring costs.
When I think about the recurring costs, that's what I mean by like profitably, right? Like,
okay, so
you have upfront costs and recurring costs for each. It's just that the recurring costs for proof of stake are much lower.
The thing is, it's not that I think like Bitcoin mining is just such a more complicated equation because like just to be able to get the cost of energy that you want up front, you're gonna have to lock in a contract for a long time, and so like it's just so many more factors.
Yeah. And then you can effectively calculate an NPV, right? Of like, you know, you discount out the your future CapEx and all that. OpEx.
But I think to do Bitcoin properly, I think you probably need at least $1 million.
Yeah.
Just to like, if that's going to be the only thing that you're doing, I think.
Well, I don't know. I have like a friend who like in rural America, like has like a smaller power, like utility provider. Mm-hmm. And I think he has like six, S19s. And it is like, I want to say it's net profitable in terms of like, it's generally cheap. I think he's operating like 5 cents a kilowatt hour.
Running in his basement or something?
It's running in. I think he built like a shed, like outside of his house.
And so it's not like a special power contract he has. It's just through his normal.
It's a special power contract, company. But like you can reach out to your local utility provider and like in exchange for like a fixed agreement, like you can lock in at least 5 cents a kilowatt hour, 5 to 6, right? As opposed to like cloud mining, a lot of times you can charge like 12.
Which is nuts. Even 5 to 6, you're definitely not getting that in many parts of the country.
Yeah, you're not, and also like you're not making that much money at 5 to 6, right? Like, I mean, it's profitable at today's like Bitcoin price and like difficulty, but mm-hmm. you know, you got to expect that to in the future be not profitable anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's an argument to be made that like Avalanche does present the lowest like barrier to, you know, securing the network out of all of the like major like L1s, if you're going to consider Bitcoin an L1.
Mm. I love how this Ava Labs conspiracy talk got turned into a Avalanche consensus mechanism analysis. That's just what we do on the Decent Crypto Podcast.
This is the content our fan tunes in for.
This is what our one fan tuned in for. He's long gone.
They're all gone.
They're all gone. It's just you and me chatting now. Are we even recording? damn it. Okay, Matt, what else happened this week? It's been a quiet week, honestly.
It's been a super quiet week.
Our favorite topic. The one topic that we said we would never talk about again, and we've talked about like 7 times since. Pseudoswap.
It is pretty funny. When they launched, we were like, should we discuss Pseudoswap? And I was like, well, we might as well discuss it because like we'll literally never talk about it again.
This will literally be the last time. Yeah. And then it's come up basically every week since. It's taken the whole crypto world by storm. Even all the artists that I talk to, all the creators that I talk to are like, yeah, you know, this is the really interesting point. Every single creator that I've talked to who's like launching new work, they're like, yeah, I have to completely rethink my mint model, and I'm probably going to start holding 5-10% as like an artist royalty up front of the whole collection, because I know that like eventually if this stuff starts going, like it looks like people are just starting to assume that secondary sale fees are going to go to zero. And so they're like, well, you know what? Like, on-chain royalties are just a thing of the past now, it seems. And so I need to go to this other model of like, and you know what? You know, the other thing I thought about this, it's like NounsDAO, man, just so ahead of the game. They built this in from the beginning, like literally at the contract level, 10% goes to the founders forever. Like, insane how ahead they were on just about everything, man.
Goblin Town.
Goblin Town.
Wait, too. What? They held 10%. Yeah, they were
really smart.
Okay. I remember they were like 1,000 out of the 10,000 goblins are being held back for the team because we fucking can.
I do remember that now. Yeah. That's true. That is true. But yeah, I think Nouns invented that, or like they were one of the first for sure.
Interesting.
Cool. So PseudoSwap, back to the point, launched their own governance token. To be airdropped to not even too many to users, but mostly to XMON holders, XMON token holders. So PseudoSwap, for anybody that does not know, NFT trading platform, NFT liquidity platform, operates kind of in a Uniswap model, has these LP pools where you can like put your NFTs in, say that you either want to buy at a certain price, sell at a certain price. You don't really care which of the collection gets sold or bought. And it manages that for you. Very low fees. They're not paying any creator fees. So it's really picked up among the NFT, like trading, flipping community quite a bit. So they announced their governance token. This thing is made by this guy, Owen0xmon on Twitter. He had this project before. XMON is the name of the token that he had before. So PseudoSwap, the pseudo token, S-U-D-O, it will be airdropped, launched, nobody knows when. It has not yet been deployed. There will be 60 million tokens, initial supply. 25 million will go to XMON holders.
So it's like 42% or so?
Yeah, 42%. There, this guy 0xmon has his own NFT collection. 0.9 million, so 1.5% will go to those people. Anybody LPing on PseudoSwap, 1.5% will go to all those people. 25% of the token goes to the treasury. 15% goes to the initial team members, vested over 3 years. 15% goes to pseudo random labs, same vesting period.
That's a fun name.
Pseudo random labs. Yeah, I like that. Thoughts?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts actually. Okay, where do I start? Okay, 15% goes to the founding team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't the founding team just buy the pseudo token prior to the, or buy the XMON token or whatever else, provide liquidity, participate in this airdrop prior to the airdrop or prior to the announcement, and then just like sell that and hold that for the founding team, right? Like, because XMON pumped, right? It went up like, I think it was up like 40 something percent, like immediately following this announcement.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, one interesting thing about XMON, and this like is a little bit like of a throwback to the good old days, is you have to stake your XMON in order to receive your pseudo tokens. And so it's a little bit of a like a game of chicken, right? Like it's like Olympus effectively, like where like everybody's staking and you're just hoping that like, you know, it, basically you're hoping you can get out after the one and only rebase like relatively quickly. Where that rebase is in fact the airdrop. And you know what? I think the airdrop for those people occurs over a period of time as well. So it effectively is the Olympus model where like you have some tokens, you lock them up, and then every like 10 blocks or whatever, you get a little bit of pseudo token in exchange for like staking, like locking up your XMON token. This makes XMON a super good short if there's anywhere to do it, right? I don't think there's much liquidity in the XMON short market, but
I know.
Like you know, everybody's just going to be locking them up and then like slowly selling off either their XMON or their pseudo or both, and it's just about like getting to that like sell button faster than like the large sellers. more thoughts?
I just don't know who is buying this thing ever.
Like, yeah, why? More thoughts. Like, who? Why does this exist? Like, yes, what is exactly. What is the need for a governance token in any way, shape, or form here? Like, would it, like, could you do it? Like, say you are a creator, right? And you're just like, you know what? Fuck this no royalty business. I'm going to buy all the governance tokens and open a proposal to, like, pay out royalties according to, like, the on-chain royalty, like, registry, like, manifold, right? You could do that in the contract and enforce that, like, when someone buys or sells one of these things, that, like, the creator does get paid a royalty if they're registered on manifold. But, like, that would just kind of destroy, like, you would just get vampire attacked, right? Like, and frankly, I'm stunned that we haven't seen more people doing a vampire attack on Sudo, considering, like, they didn't have a token. They still don't have the token. They've only recently announced the plans. Like, why is there not Sudo 2 or, like, Susho, like Sushi, but, like,
there's, you know, Sudo, what I mean? Rare, and it rugged in 1 second.
Yeah. I mean, moreover, yeah. Like, that last category of, like, people that are providing liquidity in these pools, like, how do you evaluate? Right? How do you value like the amount that people are of the amount of liquidity that people are buying? Are you going to go off a floor price? Like, you can't do that, right? Because, like, someone can just mint their own collection to themselves and not open up the minting to, like, other people, or just mint them all, like, you know, as soon as they deploy the contract and set a floor price of 100,000 ETH or whatever, and then, like, no one can undercut that floor. And so you can't do it based off a floor price. You also can't do it based off of, like, last trade price, because once more, you can just, like, send yourself, you can just buy one from yourself for 100 ETH and then, like, boom, like, you know, the time weighted average price is, like, is, like, 100 ETH, right? Mm-hmm. Volume weighted average price, same issue. So I don't see how that even works at all. So, like, when I see, like, a model like this and I'm like, I don't see how that works at all. It reminds me a lot of, like, the Optimism, like, governance proposal, where, like, they were going to set up the two houses and, like, one of them is token weighted. So one token, one vote. The other one is supposed to be people weighted, one person, one vote. And it's like, I don't see how that works. And it was like, well, it probably just will never happen. So I actually think maybe this will never happen. like when you see that kind of, like, glaring, like, issue with the proposal.
Yeah.
That says something, right? Like, that shouldn't be, like, the final version. That should be, like, tokenomics, you know, rough draft V1, not, like, tokenomics underscore final V10, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? That's just, like, a red flag.
I just, in general, thought this whole meta was done, you know? I thought that we were not going to have these valueless governance tokens that literally do nothing be the way forward, you know. At least, like, I thought, you know, maybe, like, something more inventive, but it seems like this, I don't know, like, I see this just going down forever.
I mean,
you could changing see, like, the token model at some point in a year or something like that.
Why aren't more people doing buyback and burn?
So why would they do that? Just to pump the price? How would you implement that exactly? Like,
So the fees that Sudoswap charges, what, 50 basis points in fees? And so those fees go to, like, the DAO, and then the DAO takes the ETH that's deposited there and uses it to buy their governance token and burn it.
Mm. Okay. I see.
I mean, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean something's going to pump, right? Like, if you have a token and there's no marginal buyer, no matter how much you burn, it doesn't raise the price, right? You know, I mean, like,
look, I guess, look, long term, anybody who can launch a token will launch a token. That's the new maxim.
Yeah. That's a good one. So, should we call it Huron's Law?
Yeah, sure. Sure, why not? We just made it right now.
Anyone who can launch a token will launch a token. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes sense that they would do this. You know, I think what I've learned over the past couple of years is that, yeah, anybody who can launch a token will launch a token. And then the smart people will figure out down the line what to actually use that token for. You know, NFT people are figuring out what to do, how to add utility to their tokens. You know, Fungi token people are figuring out how to add governance rights to their tokens, or value accrual, you know. Yeah. So, you know, you launch the token first, figure out what the token's for later. And
so it's effectively a land grab, right? Because if you don't launch a token, someone can just come in and vampire attack you with a token.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You kind of have to, like, you're backed into a corner a little bit, not on the NFT side, but on like a protocol side, right?
Yeah, but that's my main concern. It's just like issue with this launch. It's just so 2020, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like such a classic DeFi token airdrop. Like, this is like if Compound did everything over again and learned zero lessons, or, you know, like, I don't know. Like, that's so weird.
Isn't that the name of the game in the space right now? It's like, if blank did it over again and learned zero lessons, that's where we are. Like,
yeah, I guess so.
Like,
I guess so. Yeah. When I buy 3 more pudgy penguins, that's when we know.
That's when we know the top's in.
Top is buckle in. Up. Yeah, exactly.
Buckle up, guys. Kron bought 3 more penguins.
Oh, man. Speaking of buying 3 more penguins, Matt, it is time for America's favorite segment, the FOMO of the week. There's a lot of FOMO, finally. Again, it's been such a down market. We've just been skipping the FOMO. But now there's a lot of FOMO, which is bittersweet. You know, it means that some things are pumping, but it means that we miss them yet again. Why don't you go first, Matt?
My FOMO of the week this week is an oldie but a goodie, Lido, LDO.
Lido DAO, dude. This has been between the two of us at least on the board 5 times.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's the cleanest merge play, right? Like, anybody else that's trying to show you any other kind of merge play is like missing the point. And there's a truism in a lot of these like subsectors of crypto or like narrative plays, which is that like you don't want to be like as Jeebus says, right? You don't want to be the guy that like if you're gonna buy the token, just buy the token. Don't buy the next best token, right? Mm-hmm. Don't buy the number 2 token in an ecosystem or in.
There is no second best, as Hasaka says. There is it's no just second Bitcoin. Best. No, it's just Solana, like, for him. But yeah.
I mean, you can see this with like so with liquid staking derivatives in particular. Look at Lido, right? Like, there's a power law. Like, Lido has almost all of the like liquid staking, or had it prior to like Coinbase ETH launching. And like Rocket Pool was probably like next best. And like, it's just like a tiny fraction. And here's the issue with. Like, one of the issues with traditional like finance minded people trying to get into crypto is that they like to look at these ratios. So like on DeFi Llama, for example, you have market cap to TVL is like one ratio of like how well something has been like valued by the market, and you can buy the cheap ones and sell the expensive ones, but that never works, right? Like, there are network effects. Crypto is all about like social consensus and reaching like, you know, these shelling points, and like, sometimes that shelling point is just a token, right? It's, you know, so if you look at like Rocket Pool, it's cheaper to buy RPL, their governance token, relative to the amount like staked through their network, versus buying Lido token relative to the amount staked on their network. For most people in the equities markets, you would say it's cheaper. They provide the same service. I'll buy the value play. That will wreck you in this market. Right. Like, you know, that statistic is only bullish for Lido. And boy, is it, because Lido's up like 18% this week. And it's just the cleanest play on the merge. It doesn't even matter that it doesn't accrue any value. It is just all about narrative when it comes to the merge, because nobody knows what's going to happen. Right. Like, nobody knows what's going to happen with proof of work ETH. Everybody in theory knows that the merge is value accretive for ETH. Like, it changes the tokenomics like in a very beneficial way. The triple halving, right? Like, reduces new Ether emissions by 90%. But like, token might not pump directly after merge. It might be selling the news.
So here's my question though on Lido. Once the merge goes through, and assuming that it's successful, right? Doesn't that remove the need from Lido for Lido?
It reduces the demand a little bit, but the thing is that like, these staked asset derivatives are just like a proxy for immediate liquidity demand. And so if you stake, like, if you stake and then unstake, like without that like liquid token derivative, like it takes time to get in and out.
Yeah. But it's going to be like a month, right?
It'll depend on, like it can fluctuate substantially, right? Like it might be, the estimate might be a month now, but like, if like, you know, a third of the network is trying to unstake for some reason, it'll take a lot longer, right? It'll be months.
I see.
And so when you look at like the price of like Lido staked ETH relative to regular ETH, that's effectively the differential there. And like, we saw this, like when like everyone was in a liquidity crunch during like the Three Arrows like liquidation. Right. And I think you're going to continue to see that as like a steady state where like, if you're willing to hold ETH, you might as well hold staked ETH. And if you can get staked ETH cheaper by buying Lido staked ETH, then you'll just do that.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. And like, you know, like eventually if you want the ETH out, you'll just like ask Lido to redeem it for you and like wait that month or whatever.
Yeah. So I definitely, you know,
it's a carry trade, right? It's a lot.
I see it being extremely bullish for the intermediate period before people's ETH is completely unlocked. Right. Like extremely, extremely bullish in that period. And even then, like, yeah, like you're saying, there's going to be these like people who are not actually like actively trying to be validators on chain, like they probably don't want to like stake their ETH directly, right? So okay.
I mean,
makes
if
sense.
You look at like Lido, like they have other products too, right? Like they have Solana, like Lido Stake Soul, they have like Lido staked, they had Luna, RIP, and they have, I want to say like Polkadot as well, but I'm not 100% on that. Might just be Kusama. So you know, there is a demand for these products. There always will be. You know, it just represents that, that liquidity preference. It's just the cleanest play, right? Like it's the cleanest play on the merge. Merge goes through successfully. What's the next thing that happens? Everyone knows they enable unstaking. And so, like Lido today can't be unstaked. And so it's like an enormous value proposition for staked ETH, to like, you know, like once the merge happens, it's really bullish because you currently have to like underwrite the risk that the merge doesn't go through successfully or that like it's unstaking gets delayed for some reason because there is an issue with the merge. And so if you're underwriting that risk, like you gotta apply a discount today. But post merge, like Lido, it becomes a much safer value proposition for your average investor, right?
Like staking, yeah,
in general,
I think so.
Any kind of staking, it becomes like way less risky.
Yeah. Yeah. That, in that sense, it's very bullish for Lido, but,
necessarily like, for the token, right? Cause it doesn't,
that's
do
what
anything.
I mean. It's like, it's exactly, it's still a valueless governance token.
Yeah. But it's a narrative. You trade the narrative. I'm bullish and it's back to reasonable ish prices. Like it had pumped quite a
two
bit.
Bucks.
Yeah, yeah. It had pumped quite a bit in like July and August. But now it's back to like two. Mm-hmm. I can see it going further. I mean, not financial advice.
Oh, never financial advice. okay, that brings me to my FOMO of the week, the Digi Daigaku. This is another miss by me yet again, just like everything else. This is a pretty interesting thing. It's something called free to own, not play to earn. It's like they're trying to build out this game, starting with these characters, Freemint. It's going to be based on these characters as a central components of how the game is built, right? They're these like anime characters, these kind of like good looking, beautiful looking women in this anime form. There are 2,022 of them, all, you know, uniquely drawn, yada, yada, yada.
Wait, they're building. What is free to earn?
Free to own.
Free to own.
Yeah. So free to own. So basically,
isn't
it's
that
like
kind of the point of crypto.
Pretty much. I just think it's a much better meme than play to earn. You know, play to earn is just like literally just reminds you of the Matrix. You know, but free to own is just like, I don't know. You just think of sunshine and rainbows. So
I just mean, like, since these are bearer assets, aren't they all free to own?
Yeah, technically, I guess. I don't know, dude. There's no game yet. There's literally nothing yet. It's just a thing.
No, it's just words. So it's not like it's not like they've, like, put on white paper or, like, tried to, like, build words.
They've been working on this guy Gabriel Layden. He's been talking about this for a long time. There are words. There are a lot of, like, white paper kind of materials. He was on this, you know, this Invest Like the Best podcast, Patrick O'Shaughnessy.
Maybe I should listen. I'm clearly not a, that's the FOMO of the week. We invested like the best.
Wait, how do you not know O'Shaughnessy Asset Management? This is like your world, dude.
don't tell anyone.
Tell
no one. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
So he was on this podcast like a year ago talking about this stuff. But they finally put out this collection. They run this company called Limit Break. They've done a few other NFT collections in the past. The whole point of this being it's a free mint, and now the floor price is went up to like 17 ETH, and now it's closer to 10. So
what?
Yeah.
So like, cause I saw like a tweet that was like, oh, well, like the real flipping is when DigiDaiGaku flips, Azuki, and it happened.
Oh dude, it flipped Azuki a long time ago.
Doubled Azuki. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the new blue chip.
DigiDaiGaku.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude.
You know what Daigaku means?
No, but just to finish my FOMO off, I saw this boy at 3 to 5 ETH and I was like, good God, free mint, 3 to 5 ETH. This is when it goes down. I look later in the evening and it's at like 15.8. It's like, yo, what, bro? And then I think it topped out close to like 17 ish. And then yesterday night I checked, it was 10. Yeah, so
Polish?
Good on you. Yeah, yeah. They're also saying, like this guy was saying, that within the 2022, so this, the point of these NFTs is like they'll be components of the game that like build out the rest of the game or the rest of the metaverse, I guess. So like the NFT will be used to like create new NFTs of different kinds. Like, so we'll see how all that goes. But yeah, there's also going to be this mechanism to like burn your NFT to like unlock other things. So we'll see, you know, it looks cool.
I like burning. You know what I think I would love to see more of is like, projects like incentivizing burning other projects NFTs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? That's pretty cool.
like, I don't know if you remember that project, We Are All Going to Die, where like they had a big, like they made a big deal out of like, they took the revenue from their like mint and like royalties, and they used it to buy
a board ape.
Burn the ape. Yeah. I love that. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's a great like little ceremony.
I mean,
so is that what you were doing last night, dude? You're doing fire in the forest, burning an ape. Is that what you're doing?
We actually did talk for a while about Joan of Arc. Like big detour here for a second.
Nice.
Did you know Joan of Arc is like an alt-right figure in France now?
What? Why?
Yeah, none of us can figure it out. My best guess is like she burned at the stake, and like the alt-right is trying to like co-opt that message to be like, look, the media is trying to burn us at the stake, but we're just like here doing our thing. And like she got burned at the stake because like the church didn't like that she was like a woman who was fighting. And like literally like heresy, like wearing men's clothes was like her charge. and she got burned at the stake for it. And so I guess you get like a little bit of like Le Pen, like being like a woman, and like maybe that's playing into it. Just fucking wild, dude.
Burn interesting. Wow. Like, nice.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. The only way we can get the bull market back, people, is if the apes go to zero. Okay. So like I don't make the rules here. We need to appease Satoshi.
Yo, they're actually doing their best to send to zero as fast as possible. Like, have you seen this Coda stuff? They did like a new tease.
Yeah,
doing like a backstory on like their like Coda collection. So I think they're gonna do like another drop. So yeah, not great, dude. but you know, not financial advice. Yeah. Interesting play. When did Daigakus flip the apes? That's when the bull market, I think, can can come back.
I'll get behind that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna get behind that. Okay, so what does Daigaku mean in Japanese?
It means university.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
Where
Dai means big, gaku means study. So it's the big study as opposed to middle school, middle study. Elementary school, little study. Nice. Yes.
The metaversity.
It's a big study. Yeah, we got a big study today.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dude, speaking of big studies, you seen my man Vitalik.
Oh.
Yo.
Boy, yo. Did I.
Yo. Yo. Bullish. Yo. Man, this is the most bullish thing I've ever seen, dude. My man Vitalik is just coming in with guns blazing.
I can't believe Vitalik is like packing, you know.
He's packing heat, dude. He's packing heat down there. If you don't know what I'm talking about, if you don't know what we're talking about, check out this. Just look up Vitalik photo. It'll probably come up on Twitter. You know, he's next to this good looking woman. And he's got his arms to himself and his little pee-pee all the way out.
Not so little.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, props to you, dude. So there's a couple things that are super bullish about this to me. A, Vitalik confirmed Giga Chad. So extremely, extremely bullish. My net worth is in this man's hands. I'm proud of that.
Pants. In this man's pants. That's the tweet. Right?
secondly, just being around a woman makes him supremely aroused. So definitely not getting laid. Very bullish. He's got his eyes on the prize, focused on the merge. He's letting zero distractions in his life. Thank you. Thank you, Vitalik. This is the most bullish thing I've ever seen. My net worth is so comfy. I'm going all in. This is not financial advice. Once again, thank you, Vitalik. That's all I wanted to say.
By the dick.
Oh, man. Well, on that note, I think we'll cut it off here. This has been the Decent Crypto Recap for September 3rd. We'll be back in a couple of days with part 7 of our merge series. Less than 2 weeks to go till the merge. We'll be live in New York with our merge party. Our stickers have arrived. So if you're here in New York, hit us up. We'll blast you with some stickers. See you in a few days. Till then, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.